today, as we've been saying, is the 25th anniversary of the Shankill bomb, when the IRA murdered 9 Protestant civilians in a no-warning bomb attack on a fish shop on a busy Saturday afternoon. One of the IRA bombers also died when the bomb he had been planting exploded prematurely. More than 50 people were wounded. On BBC One last night, the Shankill bomb film documented how victims of the Shankill bomb and their families are still traumatised to this day. And they reminded you, some of them literally digging human bodies out of the rubble, reminded you what is embedded in their minds right to this day. Just a warning, as we replay you some of the film, that some listeners might find this disturbing.
We find body parts, which turned out to be a female who was lying face down.
What did you find?
I found a child. I didn't know she was a child at the time. I had seen a mass of black curly hair.
I sort of moved the stone away, and then that's when I saw a child's face looking at me through the rubble. And so we started, I could tell the child was dead, but for some reason, I just thought if we can just somehow manage to free this child, we might be able to resuscitate them.
How old was that little girl?
I think 14. You can't do that, Stephen. And forget about it.
03030 80 55 55, if you want to pick up the phone this morning. I want to speak to Alan McBride today. Alan, good morning to you.
Stephen.
Good morning. You lost your wife in the bomb, Alan. And first of all, thank you and others from the Shankill Road and beyond who participated in that film, because I know for some, Alan, it took a lot out of them to be in that film, but they wanted their story to be told. And I think, you know, it's a reminder to me of the pain that victims are still carrying to this very day.
Yes, I mean, first of all, Stephen, thank you for making the film and for the great sensitivity that you demonstrated when making it. And it very much was a warts and all film. I watched it with yourself Monday week ago with some of the families, and I quite literally couldn't bring myself to watch it last night, Stephen. It was a very, very harrowing film. It told the story of the Shankill bomb. It really brought into people's living rooms the reality of what happens when a bomb goes off. I texted all my family to tell them if they're going to watch this film, to be watching it on your own, to watch it with other people. I texted my daughter, who just came back from Japan, so he's a very private person. I don't know if she's watched it. I haven't spoken to her this morning. I'm assuming she didn't, but she might well have done. But, you know, watching that program last night, for those that did watch it, Stephen, I think that that they must have been reminded that we can never, ever, ever allow ourselves to go back to those days. We should do everything in our power to make sure that those things never, ever happen again. I, personally speaking, don't believe that they will. I think people are fed up with what happened back then, and they want a new way. And yet I'm very frustrated, and I suppose that was the reason behind I written an article on Eamon Malley's website today. And it was born out of frustration on my part that, you know, 25 years on from the murder of my wife and 20 years on from the Good Friday Agreement, that we don't have you know, a functioning government in Northern Ireland in relation to our assembly. And I think that that's a real shame, and I think it's a failure of politics here. And I just wish that our politicians could show just a wee bit of the courage that some of the victims and survivors have shown, and get on and start to make this place work.
What do you mean, courage?
Well, I mean, when I think of my own, and I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal, Stephen, but when Sharon died, I mean, I have more reason than most to hate. I have more reason than most to be angry, you know, about what happened. And for a while I was, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think a lot of your listeners would remember the days when I used to take placards and stand outside Sinn Féin offices and shout abuse at Gerry Adams. Because, of course, he carried the coffin of Thomas Begley, the bomber that murdered my wife. So I was in a very, very angry place. But when I started to think about the troubles, and I started to think about my own upbringing, I mean, I grew up in a loyalist housing estate. My father was in the UDA. It was quite a sectarian upbringing. I can remember my Uncle Cecil, a great man, and I loved him to bits, but a very sectarian man, coming in and basically telling me that, you know, you could tell Catholics apart just because of the way they looked, you know, that a Indian look about them or whatever that was. And I was listening to all this nonsense going up, and it did have an impact, you know, in terms of you were very suspicious of all things Catholic. You were very suspicious of, you know, if Catholics weren't in the IRA, they would have known somebody in the IRA. And when I started to think like that by my wife's grave, I started to reflect on the two young people that murdered my wife, Thomas Begley and Sean Kelly. They were 19 years old when they carried that bomb into the shop. They grew up in Ardoyne, an area which was quite literally 5 minutes walk from where I grew up, and yet I would never have been in Ardoyne, and I dare say they were never in the Westland either. And I can only imagine that the upbringing that they had was not dissimilar from my own. And then when they became of age, they joined the organisation, and they started to kill. I was quite fortunate that I got involved with the church and the Boys Brigade, and so my life never went down that route. So when you start to think like that, I mean, I have no doubt at all that if Thomas Begley and Sean Kelly had been brought up somewhere else, maybe a more normal upbringing in terms of, you know, the society they were brought into, that they probably wouldn't have committed that atrocity.
And in that context, do you describe them as victims?
Well, let's not misunderstand what I'm saying. Yes, they are victims in terms of the society that they were brought up in, but make no mistake about it, they were responsible for the Shankill bomb. They carried it out. They planted it. They killed those people. They've shown absolutely total disregard for my wife and for the other people that were there that day. I have no doubt believing that they were after the UDA, who were apparently supposedly having a meeting. That meeting never took place. But the people down the stairs were completely expendable as far as I was concerned. So the only people that are responsible for the Shankill bomb are Thomas Begley and Sean Kelly. So I'm not trying to excuse that. What I am saying is that, you know, there's a wider context to be considered here. And that wider context, I think, in some respects, Stephen, still exists to this day.
I think Brian Rowan made the point, Alan, didn't he? The journalist Brian Rowan made the point that here we have Begley and Kelly front and centre. And look, many people would argue, rightly so, they chose, they're adults, they chose to carry a bomb into a shop, and they would have seen children, and they would have seen men, women and children around them when they placed that, when they had that device in their hand. A bomb with a device, I think we said last night, of 11 seconds. So yeah, they chose to do that. But the point that Brian Rowan was making last night is, who sanctioned the bomb? Who built it? Who gave the order? And what about those people?
Absolutely. And those people will probably never be caught, Stephen. They'll never be brought to book. I have no doubt believing that Thomas Begley and Sean Kelly were also expendable. I don't think either of them were supposed to get away out of that shop that day. And it was probably just, fortunate that Sean Kelly was able to do that. But, you know, that was then, 25 years ago. And, I mean, we could drive ourselves mad trying to think about who was behind it and who sanctioned it and all those kind of questions. For me, and it's only for me, I can't speak on behalf of the other families, I don't need to know any of that stuff. I just need to know that it happened. It's over. My wife was killed. You know, I've tried my damnedest to move on in this society and trying to be a voice for moderation and for reconciliation. I know the kind of society, Stephen, I want to live in. It's not the one that I was brought up in. And I can remember, and I think in Ian Malley's blog, I shared this story about just a couple of years after the Shankill bomb, I moved house into a mixed area. I wanted my daughter to know what it was like to have a little couple of Catholic friends. And she did. She met a couple of little girls across the street, and I became great friends with their parents. And, you know, we would have went out and had nights out together and stuff like that. And I can remember one 11th night, they came over to the house, and I was getting ready to go around the bonfires, because I always do. It's part of my culture, my tradition. And they asked me if I'd come to their house for a barbecue. And I said, well, look, I'll go over here for an hour or two, and then I'll go around the fires. And I went over to the house. And when I got to the house, Stephen, they had built a small bonfire for me. And we drank beer. We had burgers. We told stories. Me and some Catholic friends. And I just remember when I was walking down the road to the Mount Vernon bonfire, and when I got down there, of course, they were burning the flags and the effigies and all the other sort of stuff. And I thought, why can't it be like that? Why can't it be what I just witnessed in my neighbour's house? And this begs the question for me about what does it mean to be a good neighbour in our society? And I think that that's where we've got it wrong. I don't think our politicians have really understood what it means to be a good neighbour, because if they were to approach politics from that perspective, for example, the DUP, and they were saying, well, how can I be a good neighbour to nationalists and to Republicans? What would I do? How can I make them feel welcome? How can I make them feel that they have an equal part in this society? How can I reach out the hand of friendship? An Irish Language Act, no problem. It doesn't have to cross the earth. It doesn't have to be, you know, at the expense of education or health. But they could do it just as a gesture to say, look, we value you. We value your culture. We value your tradition. And to the same token, for Sinn Féin, what could they do to unionists and to loyalists to make them feel welcome in this society? Well, you know, they could maybe stop going after their bonfires and their 12th of July parades. They could have some kind of, you know, movement in there that says, look, we value your culture, we value your tradition, we want us to have you here. Now, I know to take us there, Stephen, that takes a huge mind shift, because when you've been involved in conflict, it's understandable that people are going to be angry, they're going to be agitated. You know, they're not going to be in that place where they're reach out the hand of friendship. But, my God, we need to take ourselves there pretty quick, because if we don't, this society is going to be going round and round and round in circles forever. And that's not the kind of society that I want to live in. It's not the kind of society I want to bring my daughter up in. And it's not the kind of society that I want
Alan,
to have any part of my future.
Alan, we were reporting at the beginning of the show today on the leaked copy of the Independent Reporting Commission report into paramilitarism. And one of the aspects of that leaked report that we've seen is this recommendation that paramilitaries, ex-paramilitaries, the legislation will be changed so that they cannot have a black mark against them, so to speak, if they're trying to adopt children. And Jim Allister was voicing, very, very passionately voicing his concern about that today. What's your view on that? People who chose to get engaged in paramilitarism, in Jim Allister's words, who chose to become murderers. Do you think that we should be changing the law in this country so that they, you know, they can get a visa into America, so that they can adopt children?
You know, a lot of people got involved in the conflict, Stephen. My own father, as I said, joined the UDA when I was a small boy. We moved into the Westland. The Westland was surrounded on all sides by Republican nationalist areas. He was very concerned that the area would be taken over, that there would be shootings and bombings. And so he put on a UDA uniform and he stood on roadblocks and he stopped and he checked driver's license. He was well-intended in the reasons why he joined that organization. We have had a conflict. I think now, coming out of that conflict, we need to look at all of these issues. But we can't look at them in isolation. So you know, you could say, well, let's sort of have an amnesty then for people who took part in the conflict. Let's expunge all their criminal records, et cetera, et cetera. If that was part of a wider negotiated settlement around, well, you know, what about telling the truth to families? What about getting involved in some of these initiatives? And so you could maybe trade some of these things for truth or this sort of thing. I mean, this is not unusual. Of course, these things happen throughout the world when countries come out of conflict. And I think one of the things that happened with us, and where I think we got it wrong, was that we gave away all our bargaining chips. You know, so we let the prisoners out of prison. You know, we dealt with all of those issues. Maybe what we should have done was to say, look, you know, if we're going to get involved in a proper truth and reconciliation process, well, then let's look at having some truth. Let's look at having You know, and if that's the case, well, then of course we can look at some of these other issues as well. But whatever it happens, Stephen, we need to have some kind of a process in place which starts to normalise society here, because it is abnormal at the moment. I mean, 25 years on from Sharon's murder and 20 years on from the Good Friday Agreement, the fact that we don't have a functioning executive, and that's the fault of, by the way, the DUP and Sinn Féin, because they both have red lines. The Sinn Féin red line that they want the Irish Language Act, and the DUP red line that they're not going to get one. Well, you know what? It's just not good enough in my view. I think these guys need to get around the table. And I wonder sometimes, you know, Stephen, if we have the calibre of politicians today that we had back in 1998. You know, when you think about the sacrifices that people made, John Hume and David Trimble and people like that, David Irvine, and what we have today is much easier to sort, and yet we're not sorting it. And it's absolutely morally reprehensible, in my view.
Alan, thank you very much indeed. Teresa in Belfast. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Teresa.
For me, the programme last night was a compelling reminder of our past. Watching it would bring a tear to her stone. However, the programme makers and yourself deserve to be commended.
Well, it's not about us. Let's talk about the content. What did it remind you of,
Teresa? It reminded me of the gruesome past that went on for so long, which in all our everyday lives we all move on. And this is a reminder of our past.
If you want to see the film, it's on the BBC iPlayer now. If you type in the Shankill Bomb, the link is also on our Twitter and our Facebook feeds. My Twitter, at Stephen Nolan. The Facebook, The Real Stephen Nolan. It's the Facebook page. Mark Rogers' father, also called Mark, was killed on the 26th of October 1993 in a council depot in West Belfast in a so-called revenge attack. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Were you able to watch the film?
Yeah, and even now, listening to the recording back, it was just a bold reminder of how atrocious. Terrible, terrible scenes, and I just think that all the people there that were trying to help and trying to navigate through the rubble were just trying to help, and it's just shocking that it's actually really hard to believe that this actually occurred.
I want to let people hear, Mark, if it's okay with you, some of the testimony of Graham Harrison, who was on the film last night. Graham was on his way to watch Linfield with his dad. Just be careful for all of you listening. This is deeply upsetting. Graham was on his way to watch Linfield with his father when the bomb went off.
Me and my dad would have walked down the road to go to Jumble Street Blues, which was a supporters club that we used to go from every Saturday.
As he reached the zebra crossing, he took the full brunt of the explosion.
Someone put, I think it was a plank of wood or metal or something, it collapsed onto me, onto my chest. Blood was coming out of me from everywhere. It was scary. I didn't know where I was going to die. I just remember the smell of smoke. The ringing of my ears. The taste of blood. And I remember getting into the ambulance. And I just didn't know where I was going to die or not. All I could think about is seeing my mum. And I just prayed to God that I could see her one more time.
Mark, your father was also a victim.
Yes.
What happened a few days later, Mark?
Well, as was seen last night in the documentary, and I really, really, really put all my sympathy out for all the victims, and I'm actually speaking to the men who ordered the attack here, that you're actually responsible for a a lot of what happened in the aftermath, because there was absolute bloodshed in the retaliation that was carried out. But I can understand the reaction that happened, because those people experienced hell on earth on the Shankill Road, and I do understand why there was such horrific attacks later.
Where was your dad?
My father was working for the council, the Belfast City Council, and they had actually arranged, all the men of the depot had arranged, it was more of a respect and a remembrance for the bomb. So that yard that morning was absolutely packed with men who were actually coming together for to try and remember the dead. And two men came into the depot, and in their eyes, this was justification. And there was also talks happening between Hume and Gerry Adams, and there was also massive paranoia within the Loyalist community that they were being sold out, or as it said in your documentary, that they were being left to the side, and I think that also increased.
Mark, can I leave the politics to the side for a moment?
Yes.
Can you describe the pain of losing your father in these circumstances?
The pain is, it's actually getting worse as I'm getting older. I thought as I'm getting older, I'm going to be able to grapple with it a bit better, but it's just a pointless, if to take another man's life to justify someone else's life being taken, it's the most delusional option on the table. If you have these multiple options, the best option is reconciliation, but this is where...
How old were you, Mark, when you lost your dad?
I was only six. It's actually my birthday tomorrow, and my father was shot dead on the 26th, and my birthday's on the 24th, so my birthday and my father's death, it's both intertwined. So I have very, very, very conflicting emotions.
I think also, and look, I'm just stating this as a fact. I think some from within the Loyalist paramilitary community, having seen that core human pain that the IRA inflicted on people in the Shankill Road, some people within the Loyalist paramilitaries decided to go out and inflict that core human pain back on innocent people like your father and you.
Yeah, that's where I can understand the pain and emotion that they must have felt, the whole community. But it does not justify anything, because no one, there was no winners, there was no losers, there was just death. That's the only thing that was, and what? I try to understand what they were going through, because I'm going through the same thing. So me and all the Catholics that were killed and all the Protestants that were killed that day, we are just exactly the same. So,
Mark, we're heading towards the news, and I'm sorry I'm having to cut this short, and thank you so much for speaking to us this morning. What is your message today on the 25th anniversary of the Shankill bomb to this community?
That we must never return to this type of violence. And please, anyone out there who's thinking of joining any group, there is no, there's no reward apart from death and pain. And you're going to end up like the families of the Shankill and the families of all the Catholics that were killed in the following week. Nothing but pain. So please, please don't join any groups like this.
Mark, thank you for talking to us today, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.